Chris, thank you so much for that. The Lord is our salvation. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. We're going to turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Thank you, Steph, last week. What was Steph preaching about last week? It's unfair of me to ask, isn't it? Because you're not supposed to shout out anyway. Can we remember? You are the message. That's what Steph was saying, wasn't he? You are the message. You're the gospel that people see. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. We're going to read 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, first 8 verses this morning. You know, brothers and sisters, that our visit to you was not without results. We had previously suffered and been treated outrageously in Philippi, as you know. But with the help of our God, we dared to tell you his gospel in the face of strong opposition. For the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as those approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. There it is again. Entrusted with the gospel. You're the message. We are not trying to please people, but God who tests our hearts. You know, we never used flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. It's funny how these things resonate in a different way now. We were not looking for praise from people, not from you or anyone else, even though as apostles of Christ, we could have asserted our authority. Instead, we were like young children among you, just as a nursing mother cares for her children. So we cared for you. Because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. Oh, it's hard, isn't it? I want to come and wander. I want to come and wander around a little bit, you know, like we used to in the old days. I want to come amongst us and say, okay, what's God trying to say to us through that? And you kind of, we'd banter a bit, wouldn't we? Which is not something we can do very much now. But how about just if you're feeling a little bit cold, we could warm you up and maybe at home, yes, you as well. How about, do you mind standing up? If you're able to stand up, okay? And just to warm us up, he's gone mad. They're all looking at me now. They're saying, he's gone mad. All right, if you're doing this at home, the okie-cokie. All right, right hand, you put your right hand in, your right hand out, in, out, you shake it all about, you do the hokey-cokey and you turn around, that's what it's all about. I haven't thought this through, we can't do the next bit, can we? That's a kind of, whoa, the okie-cokey, whoa, the okie-cokey, whoa, the okie-cokey, a knee bend, arm stretch, right. They're all doing it here at home, I wish you could see this, let's just... Can we skip to the last verse? There is a reason for this, all right? Whole self. You put your whole self in, your whole self out, in, out, and shake it all about. You do the okey-cokey and you turn around. That's what it's all about. Here we go again. Whoa, the okey-cokey. Whoa, the okey-cokey. Whoa, the okey-cokey. Knees bent, arms stretched. Well, I'm going to give you a clap. Well done. Do sit down. They were great here, and I hope you were great at home as well and doing that. That's an old preacher's trick just to make sure no one's asleep at this point and ready to listen. More than that, we've just sung, or I've just said for on behalf of all of us here, you put your whole self in. You put your whole self in. That's what I want you to remember from 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. This is about putting your whole self in. It's about giving yourself. Paul is talking about people giving themselves to Jesus, giving themselves to Jesus' people, to God's people, to the family of God. It's about giving yourself to that, handing yourself over to that, giving up yourself. And verse 8 is kind of the key verse in this. The key verse we come back to again and again. We loved you so much. It's this beautiful picture of a nursing mother that Paul gives. We loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel, which is vital, but our lives as well. And I want to say two things this morning as we look at the idea of giving our whole selves, I say give yourself to Jesus. Give your whole self. Put your whole self in. And give yourself to Jesus. And then give yourself to Jesus' people, to the family of God. Paul has said at the beginning of this chapter how he and some of the others were mistreated in Philippi. They were advocating, apparently, customs not lawful to the Romans. They were preaching a gospel which was seen to undermine things a little bit. They weren't flavor of the month. And they were acting in contrary to the decrees of the emperor. And they were saying that there was another king, this king called Jesus. That's what was happening. And Paul, as you know, went from place to place to place to place. And everywhere he went with the good news of Jesus, there was formed there a group of people who believed it. A band of brothers and sisters. They were committed to Jesus. They gave their whole self to Jesus and they gave themselves to one another as well. And that's what Paul says has happened. With the help of our God, he said, we dared to tell you his gospel in the face of strong opposition. We speak of those approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. Verse 4, entrusted with the gospel. Give yourself to Jesus, the good news of Jesus. That's the first thing. Nothing that we say or do in church makes any sense unless you have given yourself up to Jesus. You've put your whole self in. So I'm going to show you a video. I've been waiting for a little while to show you this video, about 7 minutes long. Sit back. At home, you might want a coffee for this. There's a guy called Simon. Sorry, that just makes us feel really bad here because we can't do that. We're not allowed to. Simon Gullibrand, who's a guy who gave himself up to Jesus. He's got a passion for Burundi. And he made this little video. I saw it a little while ago. I've been waiting to show it since then. It just seems like maybe this is the right moment. He's talking about what it means to have faith in Jesus, to give yourself up wholeheartedly, lock, stock, and barrel to Jesus. The video is called 3 Seconds. Enjoy. Filmed in Uganda, but he's
what is the life of faith in Burundi. About? How do we experience it? Is it church services, fill-in-the-blank Bible studies, modest clothing, and sanitized music? Is it observing the passing waters and enjoying the scenery? Is it Christianity? No. It's about Jesus, and therefore it's risky business. Sometimes the difference between existing and living is only 3 seconds. For so many of us, we think of Jesus and picture a respectable, safe white man holding a lamb. But he was neither respectable, nor safe, nor white. And whilst he might have carried a lamb on occasion and been referred to as the Lamb of God, he was also the Lion of Judah. And for those of us who follow the Lion, it means embracing the call to being divinely dangerous. Following Christ, living the life of faith, is systematically unsafe. It's risky business.
See, Jesus wasn't a pious resident of the ivory towers. No, he lived on the ground with the people, fully engaged in his messy, complicated, and judgmental world. And we don't admire Jesus for what he didn't do. No, we stand in awe of what he did do, what he did say, who he touched, and how he prayed. Jesus spoke clearly and aggressively against the system. He denounced hypocrisy, healed the sick, cast out demons from the unclean, raised people from the dead. He empowered the marginalized. He was a transformer in a none too gentle way. I mean, look at the story of the man born blind in John's Gospel. Jesus takes this guy's eyes in mud and heals him. Unconventional, to say the least. But see, there's more to it than that. It was the Jewish Sabbath, the day of rest, and work was not permitted. And as Jesus reached down and took that mud, it constituted work. Now, he could have just used a breath or reached out and touched the guy, But no, his approach was absolutely intentional, calculated, and defiant. And his actions throughout the Gospels are successive markers of the bold statements he made, the risks he took, his sacrificial empathy and vulnerability. And this is to be our lives. It's a slow uphill journey made up of many small decisions to say yes and go. Dangerous. Of the time it's just showing up. Not too many of us are going to get the bright lights in the sky, the writing on the wall, the talking shrubbery kind of experience. If we're honest with each other, we're not even sure what we're doing is the right thing. We're not sure it's what God would want. But maybe that's the point. Three seconds. Walk out the front door. Pick up the phone. Stretch out your hand. Sign up. Try out. Take the path less traveled. Decide to stay, open your mouth, say no, say yes. Those 3 seconds in the dark spaces of your mind when synapses fire from decision to action. You close your eyes, take a deep breath, and go.
Nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. Even if you go frontwards, backwards, head first, feet first, nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. He won't leave you out to dry or cast you out for making the wrong move. It's not what lies on the other side, it's that you step through the door. See, he happily takes us as we are. He'll hold on to us no matter how much we scream or squirm. But the posture we take on the ride defines how we will experience it. Being half-hearted, hesitating, holding back means that there'll be a big snap at the bottom. When we're only halfway obedient to God, we can expect jolts further down the line. But when you open your arms wide and jump as far as you can, it's like flying. I've bungee jumped 9 times now, and yet every time I step towards the edge, I have to talk myself down. I know full well there's a cord attached to my ankles that's been tested hundreds of times, and it's not gonna snap. I know that I'm not going to go plummeting to my death in the Nile below. And similarly, I know that God loves me, that he's got his hands upon me, that he's watching over me. And yet when it comes time to actually jumping, theory and practice seem miles apart. And yet, to step back and embrace the status quo is surely unthinkable. Life drones on, sin pervades, systems of oppression flourish. 3 seconds to cross the threshold. And we're not idiots. Faith and reason aren't opposites. We don't jump without a cord. No, we make bold attempts to follow God's promptings, precisely because we know that God's a God of love, that he's got plans to prosper us and not to harm us, to give us a hope and a future. He's come that we have life and life to the full. He'll never leave us or forsake us. No, following Christ, living the life of faith, is a calculated risk. Dangerous and yet completely safe. Because safety isn't the absence of danger, it's the presence of God. And we're immortal until God calls us home. That realization, if you choose to embrace it, will help you become dangerously alive.
Did you enjoy that? There's 2 things I want to do in response to that. 2 things. One is never, ever, ever, ever to bungee jump. Never, never, never. You will not see me doing that. The second thing is I want to follow Jesus with everything that I have and that I am. I want to put my whole self in. I want to give myself to Jesus. Can I just plead with any of you watching, listening, give yourself to Jesus. The good news of Jesus is for you. The love of God is for you. Jesus came to make that reality, not only to tell you about it, to make it possible through his death on the cross and his resurrection from the dead. Anything that we talk about ever on a Sunday, and what I'm going to go on to talk about this morning, doesn't make sense without that. Because you can be really nice to everybody, you can be part of a community of God's people or any other community, but if you're not committed to Jesus, it makes no sense. It's all about Jesus. So the first thing Paul really is saying here, he said it in chapter 1, and he talks about the gospel and him bringing the good news and sharing the good news. It was entrusted to him. Now he says it's entrusted to you. You are in Thessalonica. You are the message. It's for you. Give yourself to Jesus. But I want to go on to talk about the other part of this, giving yourself to Jesus' people, to Christian people, to be a brother and sister. We need one another. We need people. We need relationships. It's fairly basic, isn't it? We need the ministry of other Christian people in our lives. We need to be part of a group where those things can happen. We call them churches. And that's what we need to do. But we also, according to this, have a calling, along with Paul, along with everyone else around us, to be givers rather than just getters. We don't need to be part of these groups simply because we receive from them, though we do. We've got a ministry. We've got a calling. We are to be those who give. We give of ourselves. That's what Paul has said. As a nursing mother cares for her children, we cared for you because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel, but our lives as well. That's what it should mean to be part of a Christian group. And we get out of it what we put in. 1998, the New Radicals sang, "You only get what you give." It's very, very true. Paul the Apostle, he's born in Tarsus, he educated in Jerusalem, he lives in Damascus, or he lived there. He spent formative time in the desert, then he moved to Antioch, and that was only the beginning of his life. He ventured out from Antioch. He set off on these missionary challenges, these campaigns, traveling from city to city, place to place, wherever he went. There was a group of people dedicated to Jesus, given to Jesus, and given to one another. It's vital in any church. It's been vital during these very strange days of 2020. And I have to say that I, along with lots of other people, I talk a lot to other Christian ministers inevitably, are really concerned about the impact on the church. I'll explain a little bit more about that now. When this all started, in our church, we had kaleidoscope groups up and running. As you know, one of the leaders of the church, one of the deacons, had a group of people. I was rather hoping that those were groups of people where people would really gel together and care for one another, like a mother caring for their children, to show that level and depth of their love for one another, that they would coalesce and be groups where people were supporting one another in lots of ways. Now, I'm not saying that hasn't happened. But it's very easy when you've got a sort of deacon leader to sort of think that they will do it all. It's up to them. No, it's up to all of us. And we're now talking about life groups because I think we tried to put everyone, so we didn't want to lose people. We didn't want to leave people out within the orbit of the church, the community of Faversham Baptist Church. So everyone was in a kaleidoscope group. But what we're really talking about, what Paul is talking about here, are people who are willing to give themselves to others. Now, in my book, that's what church should be about for everybody all the time. But in my experience, that isn't what church often is. It's easy to be on the fringes of things and not really to give yourself to others. Well, that's okay. There are seasons in life where sometimes we struggle. There are people in our church family right now on the edge of all of that because life is tough for them and they're not quite sure where they are. They're not in a position to give themselves to anyone else. But unless we've got a core of people here who can give themselves to one another, we have nothing to offer. We have Jesus. But Jesus calls us to be this kind of community, a model community of people. And that's why we've been talking about life groups and why we've encouraged everybody to get back to their kaleidoscope leader and tell them if they want to be part of one of these groups, this kind of relationship where we're able and where we're going to be encouraged to give ourselves. And I will say, we sent a little thing out about this months ago now. Don't get too hung up on the kind of signing thing. We borrowed it from somewhere else in order to give you an idea of what we meant by life groups. The whole point is actually that we're giving ourselves to one another and that we have that definite commitment towards one another in that way. Yes, it does mean hopefully that we'll be able to meet, although at the moment that's not easy in anything like any number. But you know, it's about supporting and caring for one another. Let me just read, I read this week and I found this really interesting. David Keane is a vicar. He's a Church of England vicar in Yeovil. And although he's talking about the Church of England, I think it works for church more generally in these times. So imagine he's talking about all church here. He's commenting on the publication of the Church of England's statistics for mission from last year and also on the digital report for this year so far. It came out on the 12th of October. He's commenting on that, and I was reading what he said. He says, by accident rather than design, the Church of England has ended up with a Tesco structure. Tesco has a small number of Tesco Extra mega stores, cathedrals, or in our case, really big churches. There are one or two really quite large Baptist churches. There's certainly some large free churches around if you go to London and other places and other parts of the world. About 15% of Tesco's outlets are Tesco superstores, large churches with lots of children's and youth work, several outreach projects, sizable fringe of people. There's a few Tesco metro stores, scaled down versions of the superstores, but three quarters of Tesco stores now are either Tesco Express or One Stop. You know, the ones you get in petrol stations and things like that. Small corner shop versions of Tesco's, providing local access to a core selection of produce. Now, the management, logistics, and life of a mega store, he says, is very different to a Tesco Express, but they carry the same branding and some shared products. And this is what he says about the Church of England. I think it works for Baptist churches or for any church, any stream of church in this country. Half our churches, he says, have 26 or fewer people on a Sunday. Do you want to do a count? We're there or thereabouts. We may be a few more, and certainly with people at home, we're bigger than that. But there's not that many around. He says if you have 26 people to form a Christian presence in a community, you wouldn't start from where you are now. You wouldn't have an outdated building, which costs a lot of money to run, to heat, to insure. You wouldn't open an Anglican or Baptist extra megastore. You'd have an Anglican Express or a Baptist Express. Perhaps you wouldn't even open a building at all, he says. Lots of people have observed that COVID is accelerating changes in society, things that were already happening. Businesses shutting down, trends towards online shopping. What does this mean for the church? Well, there's nothing to suggest that things are turning a corner in terms of church attendance, in terms of people who are committed to one another, Christians who are not only given to Jesus, but to God's people who have given themselves to one another in those definite, intentional relationships. Yes, there are exceptions, but as David Keane says, the parish system, the church system in this country hasn't really changed much since it was introduced in the Dark Ages. Of course, there was the Reformation and various other things, but, you know, the structure hasn't changed for the last 150 years. The buildings which we operate in haven't changed very much. The structure of church life is set in concrete. He says, David Keane thinks the bishops should have shut down Anglican churches at the start of COVID and just left them closed for a while, because we shape our tools and our tools shape us. He would say, and does in this article, a church that doesn't have a life without its building or its Sunday gathering has been so shaped by them that it has ceased to have a life and to be a church. Because what is church? It is the relationships of people who love Jesus, people who've given themselves to one another. I'm not anti-building, I'm not anti-church services at all, but they are empty if the reality of what Paul is talking about here, and we're going to come back to just a moment before we finish. David, talking about the Anglican Church, says, for many of our folk, COVID has been a break. Suddenly, the small army of people involved on a Sunday morning could forget the rota, roll out of bed, make a coffee, and switch on YouTube. And many of you have done that this morning. Or maybe you're catching up at a convenient moment. Or maybe you've not even bothered at all, in which case I don't know why I'm talking to you, because you're not even going to see it. I'm not finishing my sermon, but I finish this bit with David Keane. The church in its present form, he said, will have to die. It is dying. It's slow and drawn out because we don't have the nerve to make clear and painful decisions. Political debate today is dominated by whether we need a circuit breaker lockdown. I'd argue that the Church of England, or maybe church generally, needs the same. Shut everything, pray and seek God. Stop wasting energy, lives and talent on a structure and system which in most places no longer works. Sounds a bit doom and gloomy, I know, but I think there's something in that. And I would say that some of that has already been happening in some churches, and I believe we're one of them, where people are asking what really matters. And that's why I want to encourage you, all of us, to be in these kind of committed relationships with one another, and how easy it is to fall out of that, and particularly when our interaction is very limited, legally and by the guidelines under which we are working, it's very easy just to let that slip. I want you to be part of those relationships, not just because of what you need to get out of them, but because of what you have to give yourself. Paul says, because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you our lives, our very lives. They were pleased in one of the versions to share their own souls. Some very quick steps how we do that. We need to be authentic. Paul says in verse 3, the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives. We're not trying to trick you. We didn't use flattery. We didn't put on a mask. We weren't trying to cover anything up. What this text says to me is this: Jeff Cook, don't you ever think that you can live a hidden, isolated, unaccountable, unknown life. Be authentic, be real, be who you are, hide nothing. No posing, no posturing, no pretending. No affectation. Share with people who you are. With friends and family and neighbors and colleagues. Share the gospel. Share yourself. Please don't think of this as for someone else. I believe this is for you too. It's for you. It makes no sense if you haven't already given yourself to Jesus and put your whole self in. So be authentic. Be a channel. The gospel was entrusted to Paul. It's entrusted to us. I know many of us feel like we haven't got anything to offer. We haven't got anything to give. Give yourself. Give yourself. If you are a Christian, if you have given yourself to Jesus, then you have Jesus Christ, Romans 8. You have the Holy Spirit, 1 Corinthians 6. You have the Word of God, 1 Corinthians 7. You have spiritual gifts, 1 Peter 4. You're a new creation in Christ, 2 Corinthians 5. You are a fountain of life, John 4. And it goes on and on and on. And we are poorer as a Christian community if you're not able to give yourselves and put your whole self in. This is who we are as people who follow Jesus. Care and share. Here's another version of Paul's words. We were gentle among you, like a nursing mother. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you our own selves, because you have become so very dear to us. We look at one another. Think of who we belong to if you're at home. Is that how, I mean, even the cantankerous, even me, you know, I'm not an easy person to know or to like. And some of us are cantankerous and some of us aren't easy. Do we feel that sense of affectionately desirous? This is deep stuff. This is intimate stuff we share. You become dear to us. We were gentle and kind among you. It's that deep relationship. So I want to encourage you to that. Another version says, Paul says, we imparted our whole life to you. You put your whole self in. I encourage you to be part of what we're trying to do here. I have a vision that this is a church community that will impact the wider community of our town, that we still have a part to play, that will support you in your daily life. as you work wherever God has placed you, as you do whatever you do, there are plenty of people here who are affecting our community already. We want to support one another and pray for one another in that. You know the story of William Wilberforce. You know that he was very, very involved in outlawing the slave trade in this country. You probably know a bit more than that. You probably know that he worked for 20 years without any kind of success before that happened. You might also know that James Boswell called him a shrimp because he was a little man. See, they didn't need Twitter even in those days. MPs trying to do their job got a lot of grief. It's true today. This little representative of Yorkshire eventually got to where he believed God had called him to be and what God had called him to do. And some of you will know, the history buffs upon you will know, that part of the reason he could do that for 20 years without really getting anywhere was because he belonged to the Clapham sect. The Clapham sect. The Clapham sect were a group of people who were Christians who banded together. Henry Thornton founded that community. They were evangelical Christians. They lived and worshipped together in Clapham. And there was John Venn, who was pastor, Zachary Mulcahy, the editor. Henry Thornton was a banker. James Stephen was a lawyer. William Wilberforce was a parliamentarian, and so on. They were devout Christians. They encouraged one another. They supported one another. They prayed for one another. They were desirously affectionate towards one another so that they could do what God had called them to do. And look at the impact they made. So much that Wilberforce came out on that fateful day when it was all done and dusted and said to Henry Thornton, "Henry, what shall we abolish next?" Apparently. Apparently. How did they hang tough for so long? How does the gospel flourish? Where does it make a difference? It's when Christian people put themselves in and they not only give themselves to Jesus, but to one another. So today, put your whole self in. Give yourself to Jesus. Give your whole self to Jesus. Give your whole self to one another. If this is where God has brought you, is this where you are for the time being? It might be somewhere else in the future, but for now it's here. Put your whole self in. Time flies away with us. Let's reflect on that as we hear the song, "Brother, Sister, Let Me Serve You." Then we'll pray together. But please, don't let this wash over. I believe this is what God is saying to us and what God is wanting to do. And if you haven't already been in touch with your Collider group leader and said, I want to be in on this kind of thing. I want to be part of these kind of relationships. It's not that there aren't any, by the way. It's just that we're trying to encourage it more and more and more. Do let your Collider group leader know. Brother, sister, let me serve you.